I put it another way.
Healthy, productive work.
I'll believe it when you get out there and fill your share of this nonsense.
Well, if that's the problem with you, you always block every positive proposal.
I do not. You're talking for your...
No, Robert, he is not. Got a tiny little abdomen, just like a wasp.
I am not a wasp.
She's right. She's too small to muster up a good crap. We need big guys for this job. How about you, fellas?
Hey, well, how about you, big shit?
I'm sure we can make these floating shelters attractive to the homeless. And what a great idea. An offshore industry that means no federal taxes.
All right.
It's an August 50. What's the cost for loading clamshells? Oh, it should cost only $20.
$20?
Back
it up, you fire.
Really?
It's
only $20.
I don't understand how you keep the cost down so low.
Magic miniature station.
What?
And the amazing Nagasaki proceeds to demonstrate his invention, which shrinks full-size homeless people down to the size of an ant.
Let's trip out, man.
What are you doing,
man? What are you doing? I like it in there. It's real psychedelic, all those
strong
colors. I need a change, so living on the sea might be good for baby Jasmine.
I don't trust this thing.
What are you so excited about,
Bert? They're gone forever.
Gone forever?
Won't see any homeless bums around here anymore. Mr. Nagasaki's disappearing them for us right now.
How did he do that anyway?
He's got that clam bake revved up to maximum energy, 50,000 gigawatts.
Whoa, that's sensational.
Yeah, you betcha. Imagine what we could do with that idea.
Disguise it like McDonald's,
put one on every street corner in Tokyo, and stuff up every Japanese on the street.
Why?
Make them all disappear, then Spots Valley will get all the computer business in the world.
Well, what about all the miniature Japanese?
Turn them into the world's tiniest workforce. Heck, for a dollar a day, they could live on luxury.
Yeah, and a little silicon chip.
Yeah, they could specialize in microscopic adjustments inside the latest wafer.
You know what your problem is, though, Herb? You just don't think big enough.
Big? Who wants big?
Japan is nothing, Herb. If we could shrink the whole of China, now that's clout.
She's right. Go for the big one.
Well, worth thinking about. Next thing you can come out now. How are all those poor homeless bums in there? Ha ha ha. Hey, don't get lost in there, Nagasaki.
50,000 gigawatts, that's a lot of juice. He could fry himself in that thing, couldn't he?
Wait a second. Yo, something's on my leg. Yo, it pulled one of my hairs. Yo, stop it, you devil. Hey, check that out there.
If you were sure the homeless team, what?
Arrest that. Wait a second. I've got another one. I think I've got some more of them. There's maybe two. Oh, I'm getting out of here. Lord have mercy. Oh.
Oh, that damn midget electrocuted me. Oh.
We've got to see them. They're trying to reach us.
There's a blower. We got to blow them away.
Oh, that's a relief. Oh, wait a second. There's still one on my neck.
I want to spit on a homeless.
Hey, you're spitting on a company executive. Whoa. Oh, stop it, you devil. Stop it, you devil.
What's the matter?
One of those electronic leaves has got in my ear. It's horrible.
Why is it horrible?
Oh, it's, she's levitating a fire engine. Oh, that's worse. That's worse.
What now?
She's reciting the entire plot to burst the main man at the speed of light.
That could be dangerous. His head might spin off.
Oh,
not because you did some Asian guy all the plot.
Please, do not be paranoid. Ask yourself, what are you really afraid of?
I'm afraid one of those homeless fleas will get in my brain and...
And take over?
Well, yes.
Well, think of the advantages.
That homeless flea
inside your brain
has
a highly compressed brain with
10
million times the ability of your worn-out gray matter.
Well, all I'm getting from it are a list of pet supplies from the San Jose Mercury. Oh,
it's just warming up.
No. You mean I'm doomed to live with this electronic flea forever?
It's not a flea. She's a miniature American citizen who is no longer homeless because she has taken up residence inside your head. Tell me, Mr. Blissenstein, are you married?
Well, I've lived with the same dragon lady for the past 25 years.
And do you listen to what this good woman says?
No, are you crazy, Tsukunagi? I'm into computers. Nothing gets between me and my baby.
Well, I have news for you. From now on, your wife will be talking to you night and day.
Oh, no!
That's right. That flea who walked inside your brain is going to channel Mrs. Blissenstein's advice till doomsday or infinity, whichever comes first.
Well, if you can't just leave me like this, there must be an antidote.
Sure, there's an antidote. Stop walking all over people. Because now the little people got to kick like a cosmic mule.
Where are you taking our homeless people?
Home! To another planet, where they are free to be the giants!
One hug every hour, one step at a time. Your life could be sliding on one pinch of a dime. For lonely lost brothers, one bro to bring in. Spare me all your hatred, just give me a friend. Every hour, make love every day. A hug building power, power to stay. One up in the tower, can't stand in our world. 12 hugs building power, power to stay. One hug every hour, please let your bell chime.
And here are the people responsible. Robert Morse, played by Joel Copper. Linda the Hitchhiker, on several songs. Anna Carlson. Tex, street musician. Charlie Tweedle. Calamity Jane of the Soup Kitchen. Michelle Scheinman. Mary, the homeless mother, Susie Leitner, councilwoman and later mayor, Margie Wormspout, Roxanne Loger, deposed mayor John Scared, Nicholas Constant, councilman Don Lame, Paul Doki, Spots Valley electronics king Herb Blitzenstein, by Blinken, his glamorous secretary by Anna Carlson, and Japanese inventor Nagasuki by Jamie Lee Curtis.
And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. Call in at 427-3772. You've just heard Nick Whitehead's play, Home Sweet Homeless. And here's Nick to sum things up.
Thanks for putting me on the spot. What happens since then is that the the free land that the homeless people claimed next to the River Street shelter has been used for lengthy parts of the year, the last 2 years at least, as a campground so that people can survive if they can't get into the shelter, which is most people. There are rules there about alcohol, pets, and not getting in fights. But at least there is a place, and it is not condoned by the police, at least tolerated by them generally without interference, unless there are incidents. So that's a victory, which was opposed by people like Mayor John Scared, Marty Wormspout. I think Don Lane, was of the councilmen, was the closest to realizing, and he actually fought later on. I actually saw him in tears at a council meeting when he couldn't get it passed, that should be used as a campground. He was working on that with Sherry Carnivals, of course, and that whole coalition. I think Margaret Marr was in that, too. And so here, there was an example in the play of people seizing the land. And since then, Food Not Bombs has occupied the land of the Caltrans service and used it for serving meals. Caltrans came over from San Jose and tried to oppose that, sent in some armed people. But if you go there now, you'll see a vegetable garden from which Food Not Bombs can take fresh veggies and work them into the soup kitchen. So if the people occupy properties that they deem necessary, it sometimes works. As to the final scene of the play, this ludicrous solution with the Japanese inventor miniaturizing the homeless and making them disappear thereby. I deliberately did that to satirize the prevailing attitude that why don't the homeless just go away? Well, they're not gonna. They can't. They're human beings. Let's relate to each other.
I say amen to that. It'd be nice if we had some more interviews with folks who are currently living outside. I should add to what you were saying, Nick, that the meal at River and Josephine Street, which Food Not Bombs does every Saturday and Sunday on the site right across from Stapleton's, is going to be taken over and replaced by a shopping center probably within 6 months. So, and
let's go miniaturize the shopping center and move it to another planet.
Indeed. And it is still, of course, as I repeatedly remind our listeners, illegal to sleep outside for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz. So the homeless campground or the outdoor open-air shelter under the auspices of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program can only accommodate up to 100, 125 people. Churches can only accommodate 100 more in vehicles at the moment. Maybe 120 more if they are inclined to do that. And the program is proceeding, according to Paul Marceau, very slowly because there's a lot of concern about neighborhood sensitivity to homeless people in vans, even though only 3 vans are going to be allowed in any one church parking lot. So still, the basic reality of homeless people being criminalized for engaging in normal, natural, and essential human functions like sleeping is still the norm here in Santa Cruz. And Santa Cruz, nominally under the leadership of a progressive city council, only makes gestures, only takes actions under extreme pressure when pressed to do so by those who are vilified by the city council, vilified by social service providers, vilified by right-wingers like Carol Boozenhart and others, simply for reminding the Santa Cruz community that we all have to recognize and respect the rights of the poor, of all of us, because unless that respect is afforded, we may find ourselves at the business end of a nightstick. Now, there is a report I haven't yet given from Keith McHenry of San Francisco, a Food Not Bombs activist up there who regularly fills me in on politics and demonstration activities going on in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's pertinent here because on Thanksgiving, there are plans for a nationwide housing takeover. I don't know if that's going to happen here. I hope it does. We've had numerous groups interested in securing unused and vacant and abandoned property for homeless use. Linda LeMaster spoke earlier to you about Heiner House. Now, it was taken over and used by Bag Ladies Revolt, and because of that occupation, is now available for housing. In Thanksgiving, on Thanksgiving coming up, there's likely to be a large demonstration nationwide in different cities, and I hope that Santa Cruz will join that demonstration. And if you are interested in being a part of that, give me a call at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUF. I'm all mad at all. We'll give a few more comments from Keith. He has a report from L.A. County, where last weekend, you may remember, there were riots against the police in three different large cities, Miami, Los Angeles, and Indianapolis, because of police shootings of, I think it was largely young people. And he heard from Whittier Food Not Bombs that a 14-year-old Hispanic boy was gunned down. Cops said they mistook his flashlight for an automatic weapon. Kid was killed, so the neighbors then, according to this report from Food Not Bombs in Southern California, called the police in a false alarm. When the police arrived, the neighbors barricaded the cops into the area and started throwing bottles and rocks, and then lit the barricades. And these riots lasted 3 days. This is the report he received. And media in all three cities, Indianapolis, Miami, and Whittier, according to Keith, reported that people wore masks for the first time. This is sort of an update on urban resistance to police murder in different cities. There was a torchlight march in Austin, Texas last week against the execution of Umi Abu Jamal. There were riots against the U.S. over this weekend in Panama because of U.S.-sponsored anti-labor law. It looks like the so-called reform proposal, welfare reform, is likely to be going through. There's a high chance of a vote on the workfare and the cutoff in 2 years, the Dole plan. In Berkeley, KPFA, as you may know, the so-called alternative radio station, has been firing its lefties faster than you can shake a stick. And there's a Save KPFA meeting in the Senior Center in Berkeley tonight, in case any of you happen to be heading up that way. Meanwhile, regarding free radio, the FCC has proposed to a federal judge reducing fines from $25,000 to $10,000 against Berkeley's free radio station. However, they still want to bar him from the airwaves, and they still want to fine him $10,000. Meanwhile, at the national level, fearless leader Newt Gingrich, ironically, has called for cutting the budget of the FCC, so we may actually get some positive action at the federal level against the FCC. Matrix is still in full blossom, the swamp of Matrix, the program in San Francisco designed to run the homeless out of town, arrest them for so-called quality of life crimes like sleeping and having a backpack. Keith himself talked to three people who were jailed for panhandling. They were standing around Blockbuster Video in San Francisco. Keith McHenry predicts a runoff between Willie Brown and Mayor Frank Jordan, who he's sad to report is still quite strong. Mayor Frank Jordan, in spite of all his bungling, not just around the homeless issue in San Francisco, but around other issues as well. He reports that, and you may have seen this over the weekend, of the 270-odd arrests for, and odd indeed is the word, in the Mumia Abu Jamal torchlight parade back in July, or actually back in June, when almost 300 people were arrested for a parade, charged with felony arson, held in jail for 2 days. Only one person is being charged. All the hundreds of thousands of dollars spent to police that event, spent to arrest people, only one person is being charged. Tending to confirm my perception that these arrests were simply bogus attempts to stop demonstrations and exert the power of the police. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, Keith reports, Jordan, the mayor, is putting the most extreme curfew proposal on the ballot as a hot-button issue to get his right-wing supporters out to the polls. A more limited curfew, beginning with 15-year-olds and excluding 16, 17, and above, may be passed by the Board of Supervisors today. I had been reporting to you that San Francisco has rejected a curfew, and that was my understanding up to the moment, but it looks like that may not be the case after today. And there may be a curfew for people under 15 years old that will be taken to the Hamilton Recreational Center, which is supposedly going to be a comfy place with TV and books and not a nasty place. So we should all feel happy about that. There will be a cop watch get-together of various groups on the anniversary of the Rodney King verdicts, in which Rodney King's abusers were acquitted, you may remember, in Simi Valley back in 1992. After the angry demonstrations that resulted from those verdicts, Mayor Jordan and Sheriff Hongisto, in essence, declared martial law in San Francisco and began arresting thousands of people for peaceful demonstrations. The courts later threw that curfew out, and if you like curfews, folks, and I invite Nick Whitehead to consider a curfew against older people. I mean, why stop with people at the age of 17? Hey, let's make sure everybody gets a curfew. That would certainly cut down on crime, of course, except for the criminal government. Had to do that shot against my co-host Nutcracker Nick and his lame brain support for curfews. Anyway, that cop watch groups are organizing to plan a March 3rd anniversary protest. In Atlanta, a second international gathering of Food Not Bombs is being planned for next summer when the Olympics are going to meet there. Afro-American colleges are being lined up to host a Food Not Bombs second international gathering. The first was quite successful in San Francisco. Hundreds showed up, and each day the police tried to stop us from serving free food, and each day the food went out anyway. Food Not Bombs is expanding again after having contracted in San Francisco. They had been serving two meals a day, but then they had to cut back to one meal a day because of lack of participation in the last month or so, but apparently now they're expanding again. They serve twice a day on some days and at least once a day every day, 6 o'clock at UN Plaza if you get up to San Francisco. I'm reading through this copy here, trying to see if I can give you some interesting details. I want to remind you that my appeal hearing is coming up on Friday, and I want to know, and haven't heard anything during this program, as to whether people want to caravan up there. It's not going to be terribly exciting in terms of a verdict. I suspect that these three judges will simply consider the case and take it under advisement. The case, again, is my conviction, my two-month sentence for violating a court order that bars Food Not Bombs from serving food anywhere within the city and county of San Francisco. I was found guilty after a five-day jury trial during which the principal witness on my behalf, Keith McHenry, whose report I'm now reading you from San Francisco, was kept in jail and they did not allow him to testify on my behalf. There were other irregularities, but the major irregularity that the court is considering is a technical one, which has to do with the fact that the court order that I was found guilty of violating was issued by a superior court. It's a different kind of court than a municipal court. Municipal courts are supposed to be considered smaller time than superior courts. For instance, if you sue in superior court, you can get more money. Usually you go to superior court for felonies, and misdemeanors usually get tried in municipal court. Well, the municipal court tried me on a superior court-ordered, which said that I couldn't serve free food. They didn't actually try me for contempt of court in the superior court. Instead, they used a law which said that I was guilty of violating a court order, and that kind of law violation can be tried in municipal court. You figure it out. Anyway, I went to municipal court, and we moved to have the entire court order struck down because the court order itself didn't anticipate that the city removed the entire permit process. The court order said, Food Not Bombs shall serve no food without health and park permits. Well, Food Not Bombs went and got the health permit, went and got the park permit, but then the Recs and Park Department decided it was going to remove entirely the permit process. It made this decision conveniently enough after Food Not Bombs began serving food 24 hours a day to support a homeless protest encampment across from City Hall. So Parks and Rec decided nobody can serve free food in the park, removed the permit process, and so Food Not Bombs was literally unable to meet the requirements of the Superior Court order. We then took this case to the municipal court judge and said, look, strike down this court order, it couldn't be met. Well, what the judge did in my trial was he struck down part of the court order but kept another part. In so doing, he actually didn't really substantially change my case. The jury very narrowly followed what they thought was the law and ignored the basic issue of should you put someone in jail for serving someone free food that's healthy, because there was no showing that there was any health problem with the food. But the Superior Court felt that there was a question as to whether the municipal court could strike down part of a Superior Court order, any part. They felt that perhaps the municipal court was poaching on the prerogatives of the Superior Court. And so the Superior Court, when it heard this appeal in March, and this is the second time they're hearing it, decided they wanted to hear it re-argued with the issue of jurisdiction uppermost, namely, can a municipal court strike down a Superior Court order? And that is going to be the issue that they're considering on August 11th, Friday, at 10:30, at room 636 and 633 Folsom Street in San Francisco, California, before the three-court Superior Court judges who are considering this appeal in the case of Robert Norris Kahn, that's me, the only person ever convicted and sentenced in a major urban area for serving free food, although I want to give a tip of the hat to Brian Flanagan Staley and Sandra Loringer, two homeless activists here in Santa Cruz, who were arrested by Marty Wormhout's police when she was mayor and sentenced to, I guess, less than I got. They got 45 days or 60 days, and they did serve about 2.5 weeks in jail than each. So that's going to be happening if you're interested on Friday. If you're interested in a caravan up there, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is considering a number of projects, such as a house breaking the host's table in front of the host's cop shop in downtown Santa Cruz. The hosts, for those of you who don't know, are a group of merchant-funded mini-police who wander about without guns but with little radios telling people to stay off the sidewalk, don't sit here, don't sit there, don't ask for spare change, and so forth. They enforce the infamous downtown ordinances in Santa Cruz. And we are considering a counter-move, which is to both provide a table for people to file complaints against the hosts, perhaps shadow the hosts to make sure that people are informed of their rights, and we monitor and record what kind of information they're giving out to people, and we encourage and empower people who are being harassed by the hosts. That's a possibility. It isn't happening yet. It might happen if you give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 4833, and you can also call if you're interested in a caravan up to San Francisco on the 11th on Friday morning. So, I have another report which I'd like to get in here. This is looks like the longest show ever. I don't know if our 1 o'clock replacement is shown. Well, I'm going to keep going here since I don't have a replacement, but we do have a phone call, an incoming call. Let's check it out.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
I don't really need to be on the air, but I'll be your 1 o'clock replacement. So give yourself about 10, 15 minutes.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, there you have it. The replacement is replacing, and on we come. I'm going to take a break here and let Linda LeMaster, Lighthouse Linda from Housing Now, talk a bit about the need to fight the current welfare block bill in the federal legislature. Then I'll be back with perhaps a final interview with Carol Denny, if we can reach her on the phone, Cornerstone Carol of Berkeley.
Hi, this is Linda again. I was asking Robert to put these key phone numbers over the air, and he vacated his chair instead. So I'll share it. Children need your help right now. Call Senator Feinstein and President Clinton. Certainly this is not the only way we can respond to the divestiture of government and privatization and the total sellout and greater impoverishing of poor families, but this is one thing we need to do immediately to make any difference in Congress. Tell Senator Feinstein to vote no on the current Senate Finance Committee welfare block grant bill. She needs to be convinced to vote against block granting the federal money. That's 80% of the AFDC money that most families get presently in California and other places. And if it's block granted, that's like giving it to the governors to decide whatever they want to do with it instead of any sort of a system of fairness to see that it gets to the families with children. And whether you convince Feinstein or not, because it's going to take lots of us calling to get her to even think about it, then call President Clinton to veto any welfare bill that has block grants for Medicaid, AFDC, food stamps, or foster care and adoption assistance. Just call up President Clinton and say, veto the block grant idea. It's a bad one. It's going to kill and hurt people. First call Feinstein, then call Clinton. Feinstein, please vote no on block granting of welfare. President Clinton, veto welfare bills if they come out of the Senate the way they're looking going in, being a political football. We don't want to block grant Medicaid, food stamps, foster care, adoption assistance, or AFDC, or family welfare, because it's going to hurt a lot of people, a lot of people. Here's Feinstein's number. It's in Washington, D.C. It's area code 202-224-3841. That's 202-224-3841. Call Feinstein or call her staff. Make sure they understand you and don't record your call backwards or something. You're against block granting your four entitlements if you have any humanity in your soul at all. And please call me at home if you can't understand the difference and you're interested. That's 426-7701. And then call President Clinton and ask him to veto any block granting of welfare, Medicaid, food stamps, or foster care. That's 202-456-1111. 202-456-1111 to get to President Clinton. Please call. Please. A lot of families, including mine, depend on a response from the regular people. And call this week, this week. In fact, call today or tomorrow, because they're trying to get this rush through the Senate.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello? Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you want to talk to Linda LeMaster, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been hearing about a lot of the cuts that that is happening to AFDC. I don't know if you guys talk about it already, but...
Not too much.
Really? I was wondering if you could, like, maybe tell us what cuts there are, because I'm on AFDC, and I'd like to find out which ones.
Well, I was just talking about the federal cuts, but last week the state legislature made a 4.9% cut to people in our area, and a 9-something, almost 10% cut to people in most of the state of California.
What will they be cutting exactly?
Well, the basic grant, which we call AFDC, which is Family Welfare,
right.
That's what those are cuts apply to. But the legislature has also cut foster care, some of the senior and elderly program resources. This is just the state of California.
Does this mean that like people that are on AFDC are going to receive less money?
Right, right.
Really?
And I highly recommend when you get a note from the state that says you're going to get this many less dollars, that you call up that 800 number on the back of the notice of action and ask for a fair hearing and try to clog the system.
Right.
It probably won't change anything, but these legislators are being so foolish and unaware, and maybe it'll wake them up in some way.
Okay.
And it'll give you a few. It'll give you that $30 or $40 that was going to be cut, maybe for one more month. Uh-huh. Then you'll get it. Otherwise, if you don't respond to the notice by asking.
So they're
going to
cut like maybe $30, $40 off individual checks.
That's what it's going to cost my son.
Uh-huh.
So the bigger your family, the bigger your cut.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right.
And then it also, the feds are putting in punitive things too. Teenagers are going to lose all of their money if they don't go live with their parents and they're pregnant, things like that.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay, I just wanted to find out what was going on.
I appreciate your call, but listen, right now, this week or today, call Dianne Feinstein and help us get her to change her vote to no on block granting. As I was saying a few minutes ago, here's her phone number, 202-224-3841. And if it passes the Senate Finance Committee anyway, it's going to to Clinton fast. He needs to know to veto it.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. Call-in lines are open, 427-3772. I'm going to attempt to reach Cornerstone Carol Denny in Berkeley to give us the latest update on what's going on in Berkeley. We'll see if we can get through to her. Carol, as I told you earlier, is an activist.
Hi there, Cornerstone Carol.
Hello.
You are live on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, well, hello, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And speak as loudly as you can. We have a weird system down here.
Oh, I see.
So, Carol, you were telling us that you were concerned about a resumption of police harassment of poor and homeless people in People's Park.
That's right. There have been yearly a tradition of sweeps just before the students come back to town to go to the college, and that's what they're up to right now. What they did was invent a new set of rules, a set of rules that they tried to pass through the city council and the youth committee 2 years ago, neither of which were passed. These rules were specifically directed at people who might have a lot of belongings with them, I guess is the best way to put it. There were specific exemptions for people whose belongings constituted ice coolers or beer chests. Recreational materials were specifically excluded. But anything resembling furniture, bedding, or things that you would ordinarily find in a home, and that's an exact quote from this very comical piece of paper, comic tragedy, I guess is what it is. These things are forbidden in People's Park, which would mean anybody, plus the kicker is, they're forbidden to have with you in People's Park, according to this nonsensical set of rules, which they just made up 2 years ago and are not legal. But it's also illegal to have someone else look after your belongings, assuming you wish to come in and use the bathrooms or wash up or avail yourself of the meal program. It would also be a crime, according to this new set of rules, to have anybody else look after your belongings so that you could take turns and go in and have breakfast or something. So that this pretty much covers all the bases if you are someone either without shelter temporarily or who's passing through town. There are a lot of travelers who like to come through Berkeley in the summer to check it out, you know, people who maybe want to go to college there or are just bumming around the country. And this makes it impossible for any of those people to see the legendary People's Park. So what we're trying to do in response is, first of all, challenge the made-up rules in the first place, which, you know, as someone who's been watching the park and the rules for a long time, I've got the story down pretty well, when they first reared their head and how they were beaten down. Since they're so selective, it's actually very simple to get people on the city council embarrassed.
Now, by they, you mean the university police or the city police? What we're talking
actually,
about?
It's a joint patrol right now of university and city officials. They do use the UC police, but the main responsibility has been given to the people we call green shirts. They're actually called site coordinators. These are people who are supposed to be jointly supervised by the University of California and the City of Berkeley. The problem is, odious though some of those people have been, they at least have conscience enough that they realize what's going on, and they find the task of weeding undesirable homeless or transient people out of the park and leaving the rest of the people there kind of disturbing. So that's an ongoing difficulty for even the most brutal of the site coordinators. And the responsibility, in fact, is being juggled so that the UC police are doing some of the confiscation and property destruction, and the site coordinators are being used as a spotting group, so that they are the ones who are supposed to be tagging belongings. That's the interesting thing. There were a couple of lawsuits adjudicated along the way, in both of which the university and the city claimed that they had a tagging process where, they would never just take someone's backpack and hurl it broadside into the trash. They would, of course, put a big orange tag on it with a date and give the owner of the property 24 hours to reclaim it and deal with it before it would be considered to be abandoned. Well, this policy seems to be out the window right now. Nobody has seen any belongings tagged before destruction. So our task in response is, of course, to challenge the new rules that they're flourishing in the park legally, but also to try just to document the story and get people up there and try to protect each other's belongings.
Now, there's been an upsurge in these confiscations within the last week or two?
Yes.
Any stats on that?
Actually, no. No stats at all. No names at all yet. The population that they're targeting, as usual, is the population that is most reluctant to enter into any legal challenge, give a name, or get involved in any challenge to the police or the university or the city. I'm not surprised by this. I always end up a little disappointed, but I understand completely. Many of the people that they're targeting have had really discouraging encounters with the law, as it were, or the officialdom, and I understand that some of them really are willing to just clear out, which is what they want.
Now, what about this sting operation, which I understand a certain woman is planning?
Well, that's one of the things that was used very successfully in the past, and this isn't hard to do if you're not a real dressed up kind of person anyway. It's just wrap yourself in a blanket, sit down with kind of a watch cap on, and see how you're treated. Keep a tape recorder with you, and keep track of what they say to you and what excuse they offer by way of telling you that you are not allowed to use people's park during the time that it's open. This is something that was successfully used to challenge the selective enforcement of laws in the past here in Berkeley, and we're certainly going to use that as one of the ways to document what's going on this week and next week as the real crunch comes down. The whole idea of this, by the way, goes back for 20 years. 20 years ago, that we have records of regents' meetings and meetings with the chancellor where they were saying they need to keep their students safe. Safety is always the broader umbrella here. And they wish to rid the South Side especially, which has always had a really vibrant young population, rid the South Side of people who might jeopardize the safety of their students. So, of course, anybody who's homeless, anybody who's into an alternative lifestyle of some kind, people who are counterculture or who are unpredictable, all of the punk, grunge crowd, the pierced and dyed crowd, they can't stand any of those people. So it's a much larger targeted population, really, than just people they assume have nowhere to go.
Who should people call if they happen to be in Berkeley and want to help this effort to monitor potential police abuse or ongoing police abuse against poor and countercultural people?
The best place to call would be the organization called Cop Watch, which does a variety of things. It tries to teach people about their rights and also tries to monitor police abuse. And the local number here, if people want to write it down, is 548-0425. You can call that at area code 510 to learn more about Cop Watch, 548-0425. And if you're up here and you just remember the name Cop Watch, it's listed in the book, and you can get it through information. And and that's the best place, I think, to have a clearinghouse, which we recommend every town have, places where people can go to find out how to deal with incidents of police abuse.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also, Carol, work with Free Radio Berkeley.
That's right.
Now, I understand from talking to activist Keith McHenry in San Francisco that the FCC has come down with some new requests in the case against Stephen Dunifer.
Well, what it did was finally respond to our, I'm not sure how to put it, we had a pending matter in front of the FCC that they didn't want to deal with. And Claudia Wilkin, in denying the FCC an injunction to shut our station down, encouraged them to respond to this internal matter, where we pointed out that the FCC was denying an equal opportunity to impoverished people to express themselves over the airwaves. And the FCC responded actually in a way that we really like. They pointed out that people did not have, in their last response, to paraphrase, what they're saying is that people who are poor have no inherent right to the air, and essentially what the FCC just did was respond by saying, tough luck, if you don't have a whole lot of money, you just don't get a chance to speak over the air. So we're delighted that they took a hard line, because judges with a bent such as Claudia Wilkin, who is in charge of this case, at least at present, will not be pleased by a hard line approach that in effect cuts an enormous amount of the population off from the possibility of communicating cheaply with each other.
Wow. I'm unfortunately informed by our ever-vigilant technicians that the phone lines are buzzing, and so we are catching you, but just barely.
That's okay.
But you are a most valuable source of information. I want to thank you, Carol, for giving us the update on People's Park and Free Radio Berkeley, and I will continue to be putting out what I hear from you in my show here every Monday and Friday. And of course, anyone in Berkeley is welcome to listen in if they happen to have a radio in Santa Cruz at the same time. We're at 89.3 FM. We broadcast 24 hours a day, but we're also broadcasting from 10 to 12 Bathrobes Pier.